From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where Michelle discusses the issues of the day with The Conversation's politics team.
Hi, my name's Amanda Dunn, and I'm the Politics and Society Editor for The Conversation, and I'm speaking with Michelle Grattan. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Amanda.
Michelle, Scott Morrison is again pushing for states to open up once vaccination rates are high enough, no matter what the case numbers may be. And Gladys Berejiklian has also promised the people of New South Wales more freedoms as the vaccination rate increases. But there's a lot of disagreement on this between the states and the federal government, isn't there? And about whose freedoms we're really talking about.
Well, absolutely, there's disagreement, and it's sharpened in the last little while. I think that New South Wales has felt that really it's not going to get Delta under control. It's not going to come near zero COVID cases, although today the case numbers have actually come down a little bit. And the Premier there has always been anxious to have as much open as possible. She went to the lockdown late and reluctantly, and that was part of the problem of these escalating numbers, which reached the 800s. They're now back to the 700s. Scott Morrison, of course, has always been strong on livelihoods and likes things as open as he can get them, even though he's had to accept the lockdowns, which have been the preserve of the states anyway. But elsewhere, in particular in Western Australia and Queensland, the Premier's attitudes have been very much to try to have no COVID cases or as close to no COVID cases as possible. And they're pretty reluctant, even though they agreed to the open up plan, that four-stage plan, they're pretty reluctant to suggest that they will open up anytime soon. Now, we're still away from opening up. We've still got to get to the 70 to 80% double vaccinations, and we're miles from that yet. But nevertheless, the Prime Minister has been anxious to move the debate on, to get a more positive note into the debate. And Mark McGowan, the WA Premier in particular, has just been totally clear that he'll run his own race and he won't be opening that border, even if the Prime Minister is pressing him to, any time before he feels it's absolutely safe to do so. And really, the Queensland Premier's nearly as tough, I think, on that, if not as tough.
Well, their reluctance is understandable, isn't it? Because they, in fact, have the most to lose from New South Wales opening up while their case numbers are still very high.
That's right. And what it means is that they have few, if any, COVID cases right now. And some other states, South Australia, Tasmania, are in the same position.
Well, Queensland has no cases. Northern Territory has no cases. Western Australia has no cases. South Australia and Tasmania have no cases. That's 40% of the national population, and we're actually quite happy with that. So I think there's a lot of self-serving justification going on by the New South Wales government because of their performance.
But when the country was opened up, when the internal borders were opened, there would be COVID cases because the whole modelling done by the Doherty Institute for this plan to open up the country and not have comprehensive lockdowns in particular big cities and in states is about accepting that there will be a lot of COVID cases. It's about also, of course, in that context, minimising hospitalisations and deaths. But these states, like WA, would get COVID cases where they didn't have them now. So they would be going backwards, as it were, for other states to go forwards. And that could mean that there'd be local lockdowns necessary in those places. So in one sense, they have quite a lot to lose by opening up. In another, of course, in economic terms, having borders open would benefit their populations too, for example, tourism in particular. but it is a cost-benefit analysis. And in political terms, the premiers, who have their elections incidentally behind them and were very successful at those elections, feel that their interests are in being as cautious and conservative as possible on this issue.
And Michelle, just moving across to Afghanistan now, the federal government continues to be under pressure to take more refugees, as other countries have done, but it's not budging so far, is it?
No, and there's really not much sign that it will. It's laid down a position on this. To some extent, it's a vague position because Scott Morrison has said we'll take 3,000 refugees at a minimum within the present refugee quota, but he has left the way for more to be taken, and he's talked about this being a floor, not a ceiling. But those are vague statements, and it may well be that when the immediate crisis in terms of getting people out there, the airport scenes, all those horrific scenes we're seeing on the television, when they pass, they're no longer dominating the news bulletins, well, the issue passes in a political sense as well, and the government may just stick at that 3,000 figure. On the other hand, as you say, it is under a lot of pressure from groups and I think community feeling that it should do more.
Okay, Michelle, and just finally, it was announced yesterday that Craig Kelly, who left the coalition earlier this year, is joining Clive Palmer's United Australia Party to contest his seat of Hughes in New South Wales.
I've therefore decided to accept the offer to lead the United Australia Party into the next election. We will have the resources and the firepower to take on the two major parties. The United Australia Party will be fighting to end the lockdowns and to offer an alternate approach to the current mayhem and destruction that the Labor and Liberal parties have jointly created. We'll be putting freedom over fear, liberty over lockdowns, and choice over coercion.
And in doing so, he will have access to Palmer's huge war chest for election campaigning, which Palmer used very successfully at the last federal election. What do you make of that?
Well, Craig Kelly has been appointed Palmer's party's parliamentary leader here in Canberra, and of course he's the only parliamentarian of that party, so that doesn't mean too much. I don't think, despite having all that money or a good deal of money available to him now from Palmer, that Craig Kelly has any chance at all of being returned to Parliament at the election. I think that the voters in his seat will be very much over Craig Kelly's performance and parliamentary career. However, the message that this sends is that Clive Palmer once again wants to be a player in this coming election. Of course, in 2013, he was a really big player and got several people into Parliament, including himself, and for a while had a lot of influence. That's all been swept away in terms of direct representation, but he has played a role through his money and preferences in the last election, and I think he will try again to use his funding to influence the result, and that will be an influence he will use in the end against Labor, whatever stand he takes some time out from the election of appearing to be more neutral than that. But basically, he will be an anti-Labor force, and he does have a lot of money.
All right, Michelle, great to talk to you as always. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Amanda.
Our theme music is by Blue Dot Sessions. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.